We have two special guests with us this morning at KTWH. First of all, Sarah Mayer is with us by phone from Finland. She is the farm manager at Wolf Ridge and has been with us before. Thank you, Sarah, for being on.
Good morning.
Good morning. And then also David Legvold was with us. David is a retired public school teacher and administrator, a former conventional farmer, and has worked in the Cannon River, Northfield area for, I think, an entire adult lifetime. So thank you, David, for being with us this morning also.
My pleasure.
So now I have the two of you here. We're all talking to each other and we can all hear each other. That is a major accomplishment on my part here in our tiny little radio station. I'm pretty happy about that. And now that we're here, let's start talking. So you have two different kinds of approaches to farming. And let's start, Sarah. I just got to hear a quick update. The Wolf Ridge Farm is a few decades old now, I believe. And how is it doing here on August 19th?
We're doing well, but we're actually a lot younger than a few decades.
Oh,
but,
okay.
I mean, the center is...
I'm glad you can correct me on the air. Yes.
The center has been around for 50 years, but on the ridge here in Finland since 1988. But the farm was sort of a concept in 2012 and has grown from there. The first high tunnel was put up in the fall of 2013. So we're young as things go, but we're doing well. It's been a cool one for us this summer and a very late spring. So we're about 3 weeks to a month behind schedule, and we're just cheering on the sweet corn pretty hard right now. So we're really hoping for a late summer and a warm fall.
Yeah, and not an early frost. That would not be good.
Right.
So interestingly, I just had a conversation with Cindy Hale, another local farmer, and she was talking about how during the logging and mining era, there was no sort of big agriculture back then, and so this area grew its own food almost essentially. And so I'm thinking, when you started your farm, was there a sense of, oh, this is the Northwoods, we can't have a farm up here, how difficult it's going to be? You definitely have to be more proactive about it, but I guess this is kind of harkening back to that era in a way.
Yeah, that was the sense, especially for staff and board at the ELC. This isn't farm country, or we didn't realize the history, right, at the time. But, yeah, historically, I think Duluth and the area there was had a lot of cabbage exports. And then a lot of other crops that were feeding the region. But currently, we're struggling to feed our own residents here in northeast Minnesota. But there were a couple local farmers here from Round River Farm who are also working at Wolf Ridge, and they were the pioneers behind getting the farm started here at Wolf Ridge, because they knew how important that was to have local food. So yeah, we had some logging equipment come through and some other large equipment come through to pull roots out of the ground, and we're slowly amending that soil. And you know, right now we're only growing on about a half to maybe three quarters of an acre, but we're getting, you know, 10 to 15,000 pounds of vegetables out of it.
Wonderful. All right. Well, now, David, you, on the other hand, are from southern Minnesota and, among many other things, have been part of conventional farming. You talk about you and your neighbors farm right next to each other. Do you want to just give us a little bit of a history of where you come from and, you know, how you come to be doing what you're doing, speaking at the state fair about agriculture these days?
Sure. Well, I am a Northfield kid. Was born there, raised there. Went through the schools, finished college, and then started work in the Richfield school systems. I married my bride, and we settled down in Bloomington, Minnesota, while I taught in Richfield. And after a while, there was kind of an itch that needed scratching, and the itch said, you need to move to the country. So we looked around, tried to find a nice farm with good land, a good house that was close to town. And we found a good farm that had good land, was close to town, and the house was a wreck.
Of course, there's always a hitch.
So we started at the farm by starting farming and building a house and raising two sons and continuing to commute into Richfield and teach environmental studies. An outgrowth of my career in Richfield was that I had used ELC when it was at Isabella for quite a few years. So I had brought students up into the North Woods the last week of January, first week of February, and people in southern Minnesota said, "What are you bringing students up north at that time of the year for?" And I said, "Well, it's interesting to see the students pay attention when you say, we're going to northern Minnesota, and if you don't pay attention, you could die." The farming thing really was just a hobby. We had hoped that the farm would kind of pay for itself. And I had endeavored to be an organic farmer. And that's possible in some degrees, but we also had cattle. So I needed to grow hay and alfalfa and corn and beans and small grain. And I noticed that to do weed control requires a lot of tillage. And my soil was moving downhill at an alarming rate. So I transitioned to no-till, and that's where we're at today. We are a no-till farming family, and I have some fields that have not been plowed or disrupted for about 24 years.
Wow.
It's interesting also that I have two neighbors, Carleton College and St. Olaf College, and their science departments generally are looking for a farmer who doesn't mind having students come poke around in the soil. So by doing no-till and having these student scientists come and examine what's going on, they have validated what's going on our farm with regard to growing organic matter in the soil, increasing the macroinvertebrate population. In fact, I look for an indicator species. It's a little bird with practically no tail and a very long bill called a timberdoodle. And it makes its living probing the earth with its long beak and picking out macroinvertebrates. And they have expanded their population quite a bit, I think, owing to a good food supply for them. At this point, the farm has grown. We've had several landowners come to us. One landowner called me and said, "You are the most conventional farmer that I know. Would you please rent our land?"
Wow, so you're in hot demand now.
So the farm now is about 750 acres. Our younger son is a professional in the military, and he is beginning to dabble because he has retirement on the horizon. Our elder son is also a professional musician. So we have these two sons, and then we have grandsons, and so I think it's a good opportunity for me to kind of ease off and say, "Here you go, folks." So how did I get hooked up with Sarah? Each year at the State Fair, I have done a program called Organic Farming and Conventional Farming, the real dirt. And I've partnered up with my neighbor, who is an organic CSA kind of guy, several other people. And we find that it's such a wonderful time to exchange ideas and to discover with each other that we have so much more in common. And we just don't have the energy to argue with each other about which is better.
Although you are so you're conventional in that you grow soy. Like your crops are conventional.
Right. I grow corn and soybeans, but we do so in such a way that we sequester huge amounts of carbon.
Right.
Because we don't do any tillage. And I'm a cheap Norwegian farmer, and so I'm going to hang on to all the soil that I've got and not let it wash down any tributary or even into the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, it sounds like you're a conventional farmer who's a little bit ahead of your time. Do you find other conventional farmers are interested in what you're doing, especially when they see the state of your soil?
There are several farmers who are curious. It's interesting to note that there is a company that manufactures environmental tillage equipment, and they refer farmers to me to discuss how all of this works. And the majority of farmers that call me are from out of Minnesota. Kansas, Nebraska, the Dakotas, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. And Minnesota is a little bit still bent on doing tillage. So it's very concerning to see Minnesota turning black in the fall down in our country.
And have you seen any movement forward? You've been doing this for 24 years now. So do you, is it moving slowly in the right direction, or is it,
it is just
going to take a while?
Well, 10 years ago, Minnesota had 3.7% farmers using no-till. And now, just a couple of years ago, we've gone all the way up to 5.1%.
Okay.
And that's, it's concerning because the Dakotas are up in the 30s and 40%.
Well, I'm imagining what's going to happen is that Minnesota farmers will lose, and that's going to, you know, spur them to change. Because, I mean, how has your crop yield changed with your no-tillage?
Well, our crop yields are totally comparable to those who do full-width tillage.
And I would imagine as time goes on and soil gets eroded and depleted, you know, you're going to do relatively better and better. And how can they not take notice, I would think?
Well, I think there will be a noticeable difference. However, I'm too old to be around when that really happens, so that remains to be seen. One of the major things that the State Fair presentation, I think, needs to impress on people is that there is a broad variety of agriculture here in Minnesota. And yes, corn and soybeans is a huge part of the 25.9 million acres of agricultural land that we have in this state. But still, we need to understand that corn and soybean farmers do not grow food. They grow ingredients.
And you said you also had animals.
Yes, I used to have a herd of beef cows and calves and fat cattle and all that stuff. And I figured after 35 years of punching cows, that was about enough. And so I sold the cattle. And one person said, so it's a lot safer for you to sit on your rump in a tractor than to be punching cows. And I said, exactly, because if an angry mama runs me down, it takes me a little longer to get up now.
Yes. Sarah, you are listening to all this as a young farmer in a small area. What are your thoughts about what David has done, and how do you present with him?
Right. I think we can both compare and contrast.
Yeah.
Our goals are to build healthy soil, and I think that's most farmers, right? You know, that's our foundation. And then from there, I mean, we can contrast in some different ways, right? So at Wolf Ridge, you know, we're a very small scale, but growing very intensively. We use a lot of people power, which is great, because at the same time we're using that people power, those people are learning, right? They're building a relationship with the land. They're building a relationship with one another. And most importantly, they're building a relationship with the vegetables, in our case, that are being grown, that they're taking care of. And that possibly they will not eat, but others will be nourished by that food that they're tending. And that's very powerful. They don't always realize it, and depending on the age of the kiddos or even the adults, they may realize it down the line, which is great to be fostering that.
Yeah. And David, I would think you are somewhat of a conduit between, I mean, I would guess that there would be farmers, you know, old style farmers that they couldn't quite see their way to Sarah's approach yet, but can start with no-till. I mean, like, you're kind of in the middle there.
Right. I think it's important to understand that what Sarah does is just amazing and takes huge amounts of courage. I saw the farm site at Wolf Ridge just as it was being cleared. And I thought, you know, the parent material here is basaltic material. Where we live, it's limestone, and that automatically buffers the soil. So I know Sarah has been fighting with the pH of the soil. Is that right, Sarah?
We definitely, had to do some amending, you know, with things like lime. So we had to bring that in, and some research was done with biochar, and we added some ash and compost, and there's really a ratio of those things that we found that works the best, and we've had really good success with it. It's slow going. That's one thing to realize.
Right.
It doesn't happen overnight.
Right. And one thing I'm hearing from both of you, you know, you're in this for the long haul. And this is a, you know, a critical issue of food security and food for the planet, but also food for Minnesotans. And it just seems like this kind of conversation is really important, leading us all in a direction. And
I think if you characterized both Sarah and myself as soil geeks, you would be right on the money.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's been a pleasure to talk to both of you and hear you talk to each other about this. I think, you know, I watch a lot of films about food, and you can definitely see there is a great divide. And so I just think being able to discuss it in a way that is friendly and respectful and, you know, has very similar end goals, but that is getting there in different ways is really helpful. So thank you both. Is there any parting words you want to leave us with?
Yes. If folks are coming to the state fair, you can come on Friday. I think it's the 2nd of September. And Sarah and I will be presenting at the Eco Experience Building Sustainable Stage, Sustainability Stage. And I think our shows are at 10 o'clock and noon. So stop by. We'd love to see you.
Wonderful. Sarah?
Yep, I'll be there. And we can all geek out together. That'll
yeah.
be a blast.
Great. All right. Well, thank you both so much. Have a good time at the State Fair. Hope you get a big crowd. And maybe we'll have you again sometime to discuss how it's going in a few years or months. So thank you.
Thanks, Katya.
Yep, bye-bye. All right. That was David Legvold and Sarah Mayer discussing various aspects of conventional organic farming in different parts of Minnesota. What an interesting conversation.